Red's Vale.
What's time, JB?
25 of 8.
We should be moving on then. Jack, those fish were double A's. Hardly ever get fresh eating. Did you have self-heats and spun soya in your day, Doc?
What, may I ask, do you consider to be my day, Ryan?
Before the long winter, of course.
During my time in the 1990s, I've found the quality of cuisine execrable.
That mean it was good, Doc?
It means it was shit, Ryan. Tinned and frozen and packaged and freeze-dried and irradiated and processed. Little better than these appalling self-heats. But remember that my time was also back in the late 1800s, before I was so cruelly trawled forward as part of Cerberus.
What was food like then, in real old times?
Like those trout. All food was fresh. Well, most was fresh. Chicken and mutton and beef and turkey, salmon and trout and bass. Vegetables from your own garden, with no having to take a rad count first. Cream so thick, I swear you could cut it with a knife. But what is the merit of such talk? Let us enjoy the occasional marvelous food, like these tender fish.
I had good food as a kid, back in the Ville. Cooks made a special sort of a pie with apples and oranges in it. Called it Master Ryan's Surprise, they did.
Suddenly, Doc leapt to his feet in dismay.
By the three Kennedys!
What the?
Your name!
What?
Your name! Your name is Ryan Corder. We all call you by that name, do we not? Indeed, we do.
Ryan didn't understand. But he was used to the occasional way Doc's synapses disconnected and produced only babbling. Christy also stood up, however, eyes lighting up as she realized what Doc was trying to say.
Ryan!
Are you losing it like Doc, lover? What's all this about?
About your name, you double stoop. Tomorrow we'll be within range of the Ville.
So?
So if anyone hears the name of Ryan Cawdor, then they'll...
Go running to Harvey. Gah. Sorry, friends. Better go and throw myself in that pool to try and get my damned brain working. Of course, I gotta change my name.
Upon my soul, but I admire a man who likes to speak his mind. Indeed I do. That's my impersonation of Sidney... someone or other from some old vid.
I don't know what to call myself.
John Doe. Used to be the name for chills they couldn't put a name to.
Thanks a lot.
How about Floyd Thursby?
The suggestion was greeted with total silence by everyone. Ryan tried the name on his tongue, finding it felt familiar.
Huh. Floyd Thursby. Not bad.
Like it. Floyd Thursby. I can remember that.
Christy leaned over and kissed Ryan on the lips.
Hey, Floyd. You kiss just like this guy I used to know.
Ryan grinned and pulled her to him, kissing her long and hard.
You enjoy it?
Even better when you help.
Her face flushed, and her sentient hair coiled and uncoiled on her shoulders.
Floyd Thursby. Why not? Where'd you pick that one from, Doc?
Some vid about a bird from Malta. No, it's vanished. Perhaps we shall never know who the real Mr. Floyd Thursby was. It will remain a mystery, shrouded in an enigma.
They finally ran out of gas a little before noon. Fortunately, the rebuilt wag had been giving them plenty of warning, the engine stalling and backfiring repeatedly. Jack, who was at the wheel, had ample time to pick a secluded spot off the deserted blacktop. He eventually parked the truck in a grove of trees, completely out of sight of any casual passersby. They hadn't seen a soul since crossing the Susquehanna, so it looked like a good place to safely store some of their clothes and blasters.
We go and we look. Find a way, if there is a way, to take out Harvey and his woman. And his bastard son. We need more power, we come back here and collect the rest of the blasters.
Surely like to have the Uzi in my hand, going into a hostile ville like this.
Sekhmet had chill us before we got 10 paces over the moat.
Sure, Ryan, sure.
Their secluded grove was a place of quietness and muted grays and greens. A small furry animal scuttled amid the rustling leaves, darting out of sight behind the wheels of the wag.
Nice forest. Any muty critters around here?
Some humans. There's still some black bear in the hills, and maybe some cougar. Pa used to breed wild boars. Big mothers, 6 feet at the shoulder. with curved tusks that'd rip your belly open before you even saw him coming.
Nice, lover. I'll stay close to you. Are these woods all part of Front Royalville?
Used to be. When I was a kid, it seemed like we owned half the Shens. Now, I don't know. Just know that we gotta step careful.
When do we move? There's ample daylight left for us to continue with our odyssey, is there not?
Ryan put his hands to his chin, as if he were praying, trying to decide what would be best. It was nearly 20 years since he'd been in Virginia. There could have been lots of changes. Probably had been. In fact, in the year since there'd been any reliable fresh news, much might have altered at the Ville. Harvey could be dead. So could his wife and son. There could have been a rebellion. It was widely known that precious few barons died peacefully in their own beds. Wait for dusk. Most of them slept through that long afternoon. They all dreamed, locked in their own private memories and thoughts. Jack was riding a great alligator, fully 60 feet long, with mutey jaws and teeth. Somehow it skimmed above the surface of a vast swamp, covered with rich, waxy flowers, in unearthly shades of purple and green. Lori was wandering naked along swept corridors of gray stone, turning corners, walking, and turning more corners. Always the corridor stretched ahead of her, limitless and featureless. Yet she knew that she must keep walking. She was cold, but if she could only find it, there was warmth somewhere for her. Her feet were sore and bleeding, and she cried. In her dream, the girl cried. JB, his glasses neatly folded and tucked into the protective top pocket of his coat, was immersed in a common and repetitive dream. His lips parted in a faint smile of enjoyment. He had field-stripped a Stechian machine pistol and laid the parts out, all clean and oiled, on a cloth of white velvet. He ran his eye over them, naming each part.
Barrel, recoil spring, slide, barrel bracket, extractor, tip of firing pin.
And all the way through the field manual, the armorer sighed with pleasure. Christy was dreaming of her childhood, back in the Ville of Harmony. She was running through a field of poppies, red as spilled blood, feet bare, a ribbon holding back her vermilion hair. The sun was as bright as a newly minted copper coin. Around her, she could hear the laughter of children. The laughter was getting closer and closer to Christy. The sun disappeared behind clouds. The poppies withered and died. But the laughter came closer and closer. When Christy jerked awake, she was sweating and trembling. Doc Tanner slept shallow and often, like many old people. His dreams were of the long-gone past, lost and beyond recall. He was in a book-lined room, which was lit with the soft glow of a brass oil lamp, the background resonant with the regular measured heartbeat of a walnut grandfather clock. Dr. Theophilus Algernon Tanner was reading, occasionally pausing to make a note with his quill pen, dipping it into the ornate ormolu inkwell. Through the open doorway, he could see his wife Emily suckling little Jolyon, while baby Rachel, swathed in layers of lace petticoats, played with a plump puppy by the fire. It was a scene of intense domestic happiness, and the old man mumbled to himself, smiling on his bed of dry leaves and soft moss, 2 centuries away from his dream. Ryan dreamed of a dagger being thrust into his eye. When they awoke, they readied themselves for the journey to Front Royal, leaving their long winter coats in the wag. JB reluctantly laid his mini-Uzi on a shelf, and Ryan pushed his precious G-12 and its ammunition under one of the bunks. It was dusk, a fresh spring kind of an evening, with a flock of pigeons wheeling above the tops of the trees. The air tasted green, and already the beginnings of dew lay slick on the folded tops of the boulders. Ryan confidently pointed to the south.
That way.
Wait, Jack?
Jack brushed his hair back from the side of his head.
I hear dogs.
Yes, pack of dogs coming this way, fast. Listen, you'll all hear them soon. They're hunting.
Lori heard them next, then Ryan and the other two. Ryan felt the hair on his nape rise at the sound. It was a familiar noise from his childhood. He had heard it when he'd ridden to the hounds after boar, galloping behind his father, stirrup to stirrup with his oldest brother, Morgan.
What do we do? I can get the Uzi out of the wag.
Wait, if it's a full pack, then blasters won't be much use. There'll be 40 or 50 curs trained to go for throat or groin. The only chance is to get in the wagon and shut the door.
Then whoever's running the dogs will take us like rats in a trap.
Better than being ripped apart.
Guess so, lover.
But the pack veered away, heading east. While the six friends stood huddled together, they heard the hunting animals finally catch up with their prey and make their kill. The screaming went on and on for what seemed like long minutes, but probably only lasted for 30 seconds or so. It was a shriek of purest agony, and it was undeniably human.
The memories are flooding back, filling my brain with the past.
They'd been walking through the evening and into the night, traveling on a twisting network of narrow footpaths. They heard the sound of the pack of hounds gradually fading away to the south toward the ville. Jack led the way with his good night sight, and at one point spotted the far-off glow of cooking fires. Ryan recalled that there were many small hamlets or settlements scattered around the area.
They all owed work and land to the ville. The Baron had almost total power over them.
Almost?
Ryan grinned, his teeth white in the moonlight.
Yeah, Doc, almost. Bill couldn't stop you chilling yourself. But your family'd suffer if you took that road out.
One thing had changed in the years since Ryan had fled the region, half blind and nine parts crazed. There had been a steady infiltration of Muti raiders from the west, and all the small communities now had armed patrols out every night, all local men who knew every twist and turn of the dense forests. Jack and Christy heard them coming almost simultaneously, but it was too late. Short of a full-fledged firefight, Ryan and his group had no way of escape. The villagers must have heard them coming, or seen them through the trees. There were six men, all armed with a variety of hand blasters, ranging from an old English Enfield to a Target 22 caliber Colt with sawed-off sights. All of them handled the pistols as if they knew how to use them. They had come in on opposite sides, calling out a warning from cover.
One step and you're all chilled!
Jack was the only one who went through with the draw, hefting the gleaming magnum from his belt and waving it threateningly at the trees surrounding them.
Don't, Jack. Not now.
Do like the one eye says.
Okay, Floyd.
Like to see all the blasters by your feet. Real slow and easy.
Ryan glanced around. He spotted the six men easily enough, but saw that they were well protected by the trunks of the sycamores. He felt angry with himself for allowing the double pores to come and take them as easy as that. The only consolation was that they hadn't opened fire on them. There was also the odd feeling that he didn't need to take any precautions. He was Ryan Cawdor, son of the old Baron and brother to Harvey Cawdor, ruler of Front Royalville and the thousands of acres around it. Why should he not feel safe? And that same feeling had somehow communicated itself to Jack and to the rest of the group.
Put your guns down, people. We're traitors. Our wag ran dry 3 days back. Been wandering around these forests ever since. Where are we, friend?